We'll go ahead and get started here this afternoon. First up, we have a review of the proposed clock tower design, and I'm not sure who from the fire department is going to lead off on that.
Oh, I thought you were just happy to see this. Oh.
Yeah, Bruce, what's up? Just wanted to update you on the project on our bringing the clock back to Station 1, as close to its original home as we're going to get. I wanted to do a couple of introductions. First of all, this is Bruce Schwartzman, architect on the project, as well as the new Century Heights Station project. We had a group of firefighters that participated in the design. Some of them are here today. We have Bryce Prock, Captain Chuck Solsa. Kurt Prock's been involved on the administrative side, and Alan Calvano has assisted us. And we also have Ann Baby Guest, is that right, from the Rochester Area Foundation. I thought we'd start off with...
I'm going to have one.
Okay.
Jerry Biddle?
Jerry Biddle is here.
No, he's not here.
Okay. And Jerry, you may or may not know, is the person that was responsible for maintaining the clock and keeping it running, which can be a little temperamental at times. But I think one of the things we're trying to address in this move is a little bit of simplification of the mechanism. So we're hoping we're not going to have as many ongoing maintenance things with the new design. So I thought we'd start off with Bruce walking through the design, and we'll talk a little bit from the foundation perspective how we're going to raise money.
Good afternoon. When we first started talking with the group about the potential for the clock station, I should start with the premise that really what happened was, and as you've all probably seen with the history, it initially was in the center of Broadway in Station Number 1. When that got demolished and moved, I think it sat in storage for a while, and then on First Avenue, I think on Bank, on the clock tower next to the bank on First. Again, when that got taken down, over to the Convention Center, and then recently with Convention Center remodeling, it's now in Mothballs again. Somebody from the public had kind of come out and said their potential was their donation to help restore the clock and put it somewhere adjacent to Station Number 1. So that really kind of what started the ball rolling, the discussion about restoring the clock somewhere near Station 1. We went through a series of exercises. I think we've been working back and forth for probably 4 to 5 months and started looking at different locations. You know, one was on top of the station itself. One was across the street, around the site of Station 1. So we went through a variety of exercises, trying to look at location to where it would, you know, I think some of the direction that we heard from the group was it wants to be there to be a symbol of Station 1, but doesn't want to try to tie itself necessarily to the current Station 1 because it truly is a reflection of the previous station that the city started with. So the current design put it on the intersection of Broadway down at the corner, and it allows it to stand away as a separate remembrance of the station. But what we did in the architectural design is tried to reflect on the Art Deco-ish style of Station 1 in the material. So it doesn't look so foreign that it doesn't make sense in the area. It kind of has some relationship of the design and the materials of Station 1, current Station 1. But yet, I think what we heard from the firefighter group as we were designing is trying to infuse it with some detail that reflected on the original fire station as well. So there were a series of things that we went through, you know, the positioning of it, how it was positioned, and just to kind of walk you through this a little bit, you know, the concern was, of course, when you're coming down Broadway, you're turning, you know, making sure you have kind of a view of the clock tower where it might be. So the tower itself, as it sits above this, and the clock tower is on the clock face, is on all four sides. So coming down Broadway or heading down south, heading in north direction, you get a visual kind of cue of what's going on. We tried to set it back on the edge of the curb. There was some concern with icy conditions. Would somebody hit it? Would something happen? That's kind of purpose for setting it back a little bit, as well as this knee wall. And then really creating its own space so people could walk around it as things develop more and more in the area, providing the ability to walk around and flow through the area, actually see, similar to when it was down across the Convention Center, it had some information in the clock tower to talk about the history. And the lower level of the base of the clock tower would have the mechanisms so people could see it operating and things like this. As we got into the design, one thing I think the chief and the group brought up was the idea of pavers, donation pavers. So we did a really preliminary paver pattern
just to get a sense for, well, how many pavers we're looking, kind of a standard 3x6 paver, how many are we talking about? If that's an individual donor versus a large company, if it's twice the size, how would that relate? So really, just for initial concept's sake, we did a paver pattern layout for the area and determined, was it 100? Or was it not 100? It was 1,000.
Yeah,
that's right. And a 1-0 on it. So we had the potential for 1,000 pavers the way this lays out right now. And I think we ran through some preliminary metrics of what that could be if it goes well and you have a lot of donors for it. So I think the next image then starts to look at what it could look like. And again, like I said, we wanted to make sure that we reflected some of those finishes of Station 1 into the tower so it didn't look absolutely out of place. So it did reflect upon it a little bit without being right there on top of it, because there's really not a lot of space adjacent to it. Plus, we're trying to preserve some of the movement. We need to park other jurisdiction fire trucks and the movement required in the lot. So it was trying to place it in a space that didn't take up that area as well. We also, one thing this doesn't reflect, which I think the current design does, is we've incorporated kind of a wood louver type infill in the back between two of the piers. And the purpose for that is to have a built-in ladder that literally is accessible to the controls of the tower. If any of you ever seen, well, if you saw them first, how the precarious situation that Jerry used to climb up to get to the tower mechanisms, and then the same thing down at the convention center. You would get one ladder up, lean it up on the building, climb up to a little lid, then drag another ladder up and lean that up to the second level. So, you know, even though we're right next to the fire station, there's a ladder truck there, we thought, you know what, we're going to build a little safety into this to allow somebody to actually get upstairs in a ladder configuration within a secure situation. So, anyway, this is the general direction that we're looking at, that we've come up with at this point in time.
Chief? There's no questions. I'd like to maybe have Ann going to talk a little bit about the Rochester Area Foundation.
Yeah, I'll just stand up to do that.
Okay.
One of the things that we're pretty excited about is that this seems like a really cool public-private partnership where we'll be working with the fire department to kind of set up a fundraising plan so that people can come together and help raise the funds to be able to put the clock back there. We have a donor who has sort of volunteered to match the funds, and it's on kind of a scale so that as we raise money, they're willing to put in money, so we're kind of going to be able to keep track of that. Obviously, one of the things that the foundation does is raise money. So that's the expertise that we'll bring to the party and really be able to track that and be able to be accountable for what funds are being made available for the tour.
And tax deductible when it goes through the foundation?
They are tax deductible when it goes through the foundation, and we do have a fund set up, so that it's pretty easy to do.
And we'll probably schedule something in the coming weeks and have a formal kickoff.
Chief, what kind of price tag are we talking about again?
Total project is about $300,000.
Total project?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Any idea to what people's appetite of what a paver will cost?
Well, I hate to speculate just yet, but reasonable. And the paver can will have a character limit, so I know we've had a tremendous amount of interest from retired firefighters and current firefighters, and had citizens asking me about it from time to time. And we haven't even done a formal kickoff yet, so be a way to memorialize someone's career if they were a current or retired firefighter. So it's a nice touch. It's a similar concept. I think they've done that with, is it the Veterans Memorial?
Mm-hmm, right.
They stay in a couple places. We have a couple samples from them we're going to look at.
I was going to ask, have you spoken with any of that group? They get a lot of expertise in pavers and donations and so forth.
We're going
price point.
I have some contact information, and then got a little bit of interest initially from the business community already. So, I'm hoping and I'm thinking we're going to get there.
And when are you hoping to have the kickoff?
Next couple of weeks, we'll probably do get something put together and have a grand fundraising kickoff.
So at this point in time, you're not asking for any city dollars for the project?
No, unless you'd all like to donate and put a brick in there.
There you go. Depends what reasonable is.
That's right. Yeah, we had a 2 cent a month increase on the stormwater fee was unreasonable to some, so it's all relative.
No, at this point, when I was here a few months back, I forget now, the city investment is just for professional services, so we're trying to do the rest of the donations.
Ms. Means.
I'm just very pleased with the way it looks. It looks just beautiful. And it sounds like Jerry will still be available if that clock needs attention. It was sort of a pet peeve coming down the Civic Center and seeing it was 3 o'clock and it was 3:20, which is normally the time I try to circle around that corner. So the accuracy is real important, I think, because it reflects on us, I believe.
That's not my expertise, but I understand that by making that mechanism with a few different U-joints from the pendulum to the clock itself, it'll help it be a little more accurate.
I don't see my note handy, but I think you referenced that there were trees being removed.
Yes.
And where were those trees originally, and what was the quality of those trees?
Rough proximity. The trees that are currently back here on Broadway, probably, I want to say, 3 or so as you get closer to the corner. So to make the clock tower visible and prominent as of its own kind of location, we're proposing those being pulled back on both sides. So, and then we did do some preliminary review with Public Works on this as far as its proximity to the light, the stoplight, and it looks a little tall for a street light. But and that seemed to be, I think, in good shape with everybody's direction of Public Works as well.
Now, is the bell going to work?
Yes.
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 One other question. How much of the image that's shown there is taken from the old clock? I mean, how much of that is the new clock as opposed to maintaining that historic piece?
Artistic licensing. Yeah. I mean, we tried to. If you look at the old, I mean, the original piece, of course, will be the bell,
the clock,
and really the clock and the mechanism itself. We don't really show it here, but if you remember down at the convention center, some of the other locations, the whole pendulum mechanism and everything else, that would all be, of course, the original. I think the only thing not, of course, other than the supporting mechanism, really will be like the chief was talking about, that connection goes from the clock here down to this mechanism and then back to the bell. Those components will be new. So, and we went through another, I should say, when we first started, too, we did look at a variety of design options. I mean, we looked at the, kind of interesting, you had to, of course, the old fire station had a very kind of ornate, almost Victorian look to the whole station. It was gorgeous. And then it went over to the bank and it had a really modernist kind of look there. And then went over to the convention center, it was got kind of mauve colored steel frame. So we looked at a lot of different design implications here, and I think the group kind of agreed. The other thing you can't really see here too is, when you look at the original fire station, it had some grooves in some fine detail work in the brick on the old fire station. We tried to incorporate that. You can't really see it in the rendering, but to make some relief in the brick so it's not just a big, massive brick column. It's got some relief, again, subtle remembrances to the old station.
I noticed at the grand opening of new fire station 2, there was a little bit of the original, some Art Deco panels, I think, incorporated into the architecture. Is any of that still left over from Station 1?
That's the original Station 1. No, that station was, I think, demolished in 1930.
I meant from the one that was demolished more recent.
Oh, they saved the brass bowl.
Right. Nothing of the architectural facade.
No.
Okay. Those are neat elements if they can be incorporated into the facade. But all right. Any other questions from the council? Mr. Russ,
I really like this. I appreciate the work that all you have put into the design and the way it looks. It, one of the things that I think about with our cities, we don't have a lot of identifiable and unique pieces in it around our city, and I think this will give us one that, as you're coming into town, it's there. I hope it's well maintained. I'm not real sure about the wood piece in between. I understand the need for a ladder, but I'm just not sure how that's going to look with all the stone and brick and that, but Yeah, I like that better.
I second that opinion.
Yeah, and but I really think, you know, it's a...
Oh.
But I'm a little bit concerned about, not sure what the papers are, but I would certainly be happy to purchase one if it's in, you know, in that three, you know, I think to do that as an option for fundraising that we can all pitch in and honor our firefighters and our community like that is certainly a nice way. I know it was successful
depending on the size of the brick and everything, $100 to $300. So.
Yeah, that's about what I was figuring when you're talking about the price. So I'm happy to commit to that if it's in that area. If you guys are going to bump it up to $1,000, then I'm in.
just for you.
Just for him.
I have a special
for like a
larger
corporate one.
Yeah.
$500 to $1,000, probably appropriate.
No, nice work, guys.
All right. Anything else?
Bicycles going the wrong way.
I know that. Sorry, they're not usually like
that. probably accurate, though.
They're not usually
like that. Are you hiding that? We'll pull out there with an Air Marshal's car.
I'll just second what Councilmember Ruska just said. I prefer the see-through option. Only other thing I might ask is maybe a nighttime rendering, because I think that's another really interesting aspect here is how this looks at night because it's such a prominent part of town.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's a real challenge with the look of trying to get access to the mechanism without having someone fall off the ladder. It's pretty precarious on the other setting. So
we'll have to make sure when we redevelop that parking lot behind it that blends right in.
Yeah. Well, we could roll the fire truck out and put them the ladder right up to it, too. It's right there.
All right.
So you're indicating you're in general agreement with the design as proposed? Yeah.
Okay. I think so. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Steve, make sure they contact me when they figure out the prices. I'll buy a fee.
The mechanism.
All right.
Worry about somebody busting.
We will.
The corporate. Build a bat corporation.
Go ahead and move on to our next item.
Yeah, it'll be the first one to phase.
We've got consideration of a sidewalk improvement district concept. Mr. Freeze.
You've heard reference to street improvement district over the past.
Richard, just out of curiosity, about how long do you think the presentation would take?
As long as you want.
But probably we're talking at least a half hour or so. So you know what I might want to do. We've got some guests here, and we were trying to wait for the mayor's arrival. But with respect to your time, you have very brief comments. So why don't we let you go ahead? Because I really want to hate to interrupt Richard once that's on.
I was at the airport.
Yeah.
I was at the airport today, and I didn't see you there.
You didn't see me?
No, I talked to Kurt.
So we're here today to really publicly thank you as our elected officials, as well as the city, for embracing the Fly Local policy. This weekend, you'll see an ad in the newspaper. It's our first 25 on our way to 100 that have signed a Fly Local policy. That's a beginning, not an end. So we're here to thank you. And provide you with a token of support and thanks. So in the airport world, if you walk into an airport director's office, you see you'll see airplanes, and those aren't purchased. They shouldn't be. They're usually a gift for a milestone or something that you've done or something you've been involved in. You know, be it new service or something new. So this is our gift to the city. I'd love to see it, you know, prominently in the front, so that when people do ask what's that for and where did it come from, you can tell them we're a Fly Local supporter. That's why we got it. I'm not going to give it to anybody who does not become a Fly Local supporter. Anybody. If you're a Fly Local supporter, you'll get one. That's it. So again, our thanks, and we appreciate your support for the airport and Fly Local as part of it. That's it.
Mr. Ruskin.
I appreciate all your work. One of the things I might suggest with that to signify kind of the commitment that the city has, maybe we put it out at the city clerk's desk there, where people that come in and out of the City Hall can see it there. If it goes up in somebody's office, they don't see it. And, you know, there is a lot of interaction right there, and maybe it can be brought up, you know, someplace that we can be proud to show it and show our support.
That would be great.
I was at the airport today. I was doing the TSA pre-check.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's important for everybody to know that there's a lot of services that they do offer, that it's not just the pre-check, but I understand it's also for those who need to get their hazmat licenses redone, as well as a couple other things. It's a great service. I was amazed. There was probably four people in and out while waiting when I got there, or right after I got there. Good service. It's service that people ought to know that the airport does more than just put you on airplanes and send you out or receive you from the airplanes. There are things that you can do. The pre-check is a great program.
Yeah.
It helps you get through the check-in lines a lot quicker, and and as well as knowing there are other services that they do do the registration and licensing for.
And somewhat financially efficient, if you notice the staff member that was working on that with you is multitasking.
Yes, he was one of our firefighters.
That's correct.
I would agree. The Global Entry Program, pre-check, that's a really great program for those that want to really expedite their passage. Good program. So,
just, you know, you're up to 25 out of 100. I would challenge everybody that has a contact or connection with some business to look into this and to try to get on board so we can get to that 100 and help you. You guys are out doing your part. Everybody needs to step up and do their part, too. So,
and we're willing to go anywhere and talk to anybody as it relates to that type of commitment, for sure. So,
all right.
Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll leave that for
you
there.
Okay, Roger. You have to stay now. So, never mind going after John. Because John will ask you for a mile of runway. Because that will get you anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But as I remind him, a mile of highway gets you to the airport. Brothers working together. Yes. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Have a good day. Over the years, you've all heard the term street improvement district and how the legislature has not seen fit to establish a street improvement district. Well, back in 1974, they saw fit to establish a sidewalk improvement district, which is exactly the same way the street improvement district is kind of proposed, but yet we can't get off the ground with the street. So today we're going to talk to you about sidewalk improvement districts and how it gives you, if you were to do this, would give you a potential another tool to help fund some of the sidewalk improvements that are necessary in the community. I sent you some information before. Staff has been working on this now on and off for about a year and a half as we have time. The implementation of this, if you wanted to do it, is strictly on your schedule. But we think it's, a tool that you might want to use to fund a portion or maybe all of your sidewalk needs. And we're going to talk to you a little bit about that today. John Welder is going to do the presentation. You've all met John over the course of the years as sidewalk projects have been in your ward. You've gotten to know John, probably have his number on speed dial. But I think you've all shared with me your frustration about how cumbersome the process is that we have today for making sidewalk repairs in neighborhoods. About that we go out and we do an inspection and we put that pink paint on the ground, and that night you get a whole bunch of phone calls. And we send out a card and remind people that that they have a defect and they have several options. They can have the city repair it, or they can hire a contractor to repair it. We used to let them do it themselves, which even made it more challenging for us. But the process itself takes about 2 years. And it's very cumbersome, very challenging, very inefficient from a staff perspective. And what we want to talk to you today about is this option. It would make it a lot more efficient for us. We think less onerous and time-consuming for the people who may have sidewalk defects in front of their property, but also address some of the other issues like ADA compliance, gaps in the network itself, and even some of the other maintenance activities that are eligible. So the statute has been available for over 30 years, almost 40 years now, for your use. And we'd like to talk to you a little bit about it and see if you have any interest in pursuing it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to John, and I'll answer questions when he's done.
I passed out, and I hope at least the council has a copy, a paper copy of the slide presentation, and it also obviously will be shown up here. So today I want to hit only four particular topics. the sidewalk improvement district and the statute, the what a sidewalk actually is. Sounds intuitive, but there is a legal definition, and we need to recognize there are some nuances there. The type of work that could be included in a sidewalk improvement district funding process, what kind of sidewalk repair work we need to do, and then some cost recovery possibilities. So the statute that applies is 435-44, and I believe in some of your handout material prior to the meeting, a copy of that statute was included. It's very brief, and it's about this much on one sheet of paper. So, but a sidewalk has a definition also in the statutes, and basically it's a pedestrian way that is parallel with the street, but not on the street, and it needs to be on or close to the right way. Parks, trails, for example, that go through a park are not sidewalks by this definition. But it can be, it must be outside the curb, but it can be asphalt or concrete, and although the statute's not clear, I think that the key here is it needs to be something that is ADA compliant. And asphalt and concrete are both ADA compliant. I think there's probably a few other choices too, but for discussion we'll maybe confine to asphalt and concrete. The type of work that we are contemplating: the repair and replacement of existing sidewalks. These are the kind of activities that generate a lot of phone calls. And for the councilmen that have constituents in the southeast part of the city, they've received a number of phone calls and emails over the course of the last couple months. Other council people have been blessed with this in the past. I think we need to be thinking about ADA compliance. We have a transition plan that's been adopted by the city to bring ourselves into ADA compliance. And then there are spot infills that we are always challenged on how do we fund. And these would be selective projects that the council would say we really need that. A special route to school, for example, create a better walking route. Sidewalks to transit. So people want to get on the bus, but they can't walk to the bus because the sidewalk isn't present. And then there are other gaps that could become priorities. Work that we don't recommend. Perhaps it could be put in here, but we don't recommend that, staff does anyway. That obligation under related to new construction, so a development or a new building, we don't recommend that that be funded through this mechanism. That those particular kinds of sidewalks be funded by the developer, by the builder, as they are today.
For the initial installation.
With initial installation.
Once it's in the inventory, it would be
the repair work, once it's out of warranty, would covered by this. Mm-hmm. Could be. Driveway aprons are not sidewalks, and so that they would not be counted or included.
But the section of sidewalk through the driveway would be eligible, right? But just the apron would not.
These would be the same thing when we go out and paint sidewalks. We do not paint the aprons, but we do look at the sidewalk that goes through the driveway. Districts. We believe that the DMC needs to be its own and separate district. It's so unique that if you were to take that and consider with the rest of the city, it's probably not a good idea. So we would say the DMC should have its own sidewalk district, sidewalk improvement district. Otherwise, I think we're open to a lot of possibilities. We need to be looking at something that various districts that have more or less a uniform size, that we can rotate the work through the district. This is kind of important so that the program can, from year to year, be similar. Ups and downs become a problem for everyone, both staffing and then budgeting as well. So uniform and rotate the work through the district. Because the way the statute works, assessments cannot be, this is a form of assessment, but they cannot be for more than 5 years. So we suggest that the number of districts be either 5 or 10. We have, as you look down, we have the possibility of looking potentially at 6 or 12, but so 5 or 10 districts. The advantage potentially of a 5-district process is that obviously you're spreading the cost among more people. So the payment per year would be less. However, because we're going to rotate every 5 years through these districts, basically the payment will be continuous, or there will be a continuous assessment. 10, smaller district, your assessment would be half as often, but probably twice as much to maintain the same fixed program. How you would split up the districts, we believe that there are 3 possibilities. By quadrant of the city, by geographic features, and the geographic feature is like the river, being a separator of between districts. And then by wards. Now, if we were to go by wards, we would have to basically shift from 5 to a 6-year program. We can't assess more than 5, but
I think Mr. Camp had a question, then Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, is it 5 or 10 in addition to the DMC?
In addition to the DMC.
Okay, so 6 total with, okay, thanks. That was my question.
Mr. Hickey.
So for example, in your example there, if you had the 4 quadrants of the city plus the DMC, that would be your 5 potential.
No, we would take the 4 quadrants of the city and break them up. I think it's the next slide. Actually.
Okay.
So we take the quadrants of the city. Northwest is much larger than the others, so we would have more districts, more splits. This is 10 plus 1 districts as an example. So you have the DMC and then districts that match the quadrants of the city, basically. And we can do the same thing with geographic features.
Do they have to be contiguous? Okay, never mind. You had my point. Never mind.
Well, the boundaries of the district, I think, probably have to be contiguous. I'm not sure that I could make a statement certainly on that, but
I wouldn't want to explain it.
Yeah.
This is an example. If we were to take and use the 5-district methodology using features, this is Highway 63. The an advantage of features, Highway 63, you are not going to do a sidewalk project on this side of the street, and the neighbors across the road are going to say, how come you're not doing it on mine? Mm-hmm. Because the distance is too much. Okay. Assessment. The statute says assessments are by parcel based on classification of real estate. Defining that could be a little bit tricky, but classification of real estate. And we believe multipliers such as this might be appropriate. Residential, single family residential, which is basically R1 and R2, would be the base unit. So one. Multifamily, this would be apartments, more than the number of units covered by a R2 district, would be a multiplier of 3. Commercial industrial would be a multiplier of 10. These aren't fixed by anything. These are just the staff recommendation for discussion. Again, the districts we believe need to be have uniformity and indirect benefit, so they need to be somewhat contiguous. The assessment would be by district over periods of no more than 5 years. This, we believe, is not subject to objection or appeal based on the same criteria that appeals can be processed with by Chapter 429. The city attorney could maybe weigh in whether that's true or not, but it is not a 429 assessment process.
Which means we don't have to show increased market value in order to assess someone the cost of the improvement, which we have to under 429.
Which challenges us with assessment projects.
Is the distinction just that you're part of a district? Is that
a different statute?
Okay, just a
it says all the legislature requires is that they be assessed on a direct or indirect benefit. So if they benefit directly or indirectly, in the discussion.
Okay.
So you support what they're saying then, that you don't think it applies?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Again, we believe assessments by parcel based upon this classification real estate, and that we would have probably exempt, at least for a period of time, those areas of the township that were brought in as part of the water quality protection program. There was some commitments to those individuals that the city would not be imposing like curb and gutter and some of those things initially anyway. So considering not including them in the process, I think there's a couple ways to do that, but probably just not including them in the district would be a simple way. So the need for funds. How much money should we really have to do our sidewalk work properly? Currently, we assess or we inspect 5% of the city sidewalk a year, plus all of the downtown. And that program costs the city, the homeowners, somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 a year. We have an ADA transition plan that says basically we're going to replace all of the pedestrian ramps in 40 years. That's what the plan says. If we were to replace 2% of the ramps, of the 4,000 ramps we have annually, that would be somewhere between $250,000 and $400,000 for that element. While we are looking at sidewalks, we note that many of the sidewalk problems are associated with boulevard trees. And so there is an additional impact on taxpayers and on the city treasury to deal with tree preservation, tree removal, root management, etc., that relate to trees and sidewalk conflicts. And we believe that the program we have right now, 2016 impact, is going to be somewhere between $200,000 and $250,000 to the Parks Department. And this relates to the sidewalk element, or because of the sidewalk. Or, I'm sidewalk guys, because of the tree. But. So we have gaps in sidewalks that we would like to build. We find it uncomfortable to assess the property owners for a variety of reasons, perhaps income being one of those. And if we were to look at doing about 1,000 feet a year, so that's three blocks, pretty small amount actually, three blocks on one side, that's about $60,000. We have approximately 100 miles of trail in this city. And about half of that can be defined as sidewalk because it's within the public right-of-way. The other half is within parks, which can't be covered by this, but it's so if we have 50 miles, and we were to do presentation of a tenth of that per year, 5 miles a year, we're talking about another $500,000 to do that. We are not spending all of this money. This, for example, our trail preservation program is less than $50,000. That basically means the trails are not being cared for very well. So we're talking about a total need here of somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million.
Before you go to the next slide, I think one of the big questions right out of the gate will be from taxpayer perspective, I'm already paying property tax, why isn't that covered? Why are we talking about this? So my question is, if that's the total expectation, what are we currently budgeting approximately annually to accommodate these needs?
Well, in my memo that I sent to you Friday morning, it somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million.
Okay.
And again, I think part of that is that the property owner is paying for a lot of that already, particularly under bullet number one up on top. So the repair is entirely a property owner responsibility currently. So we aren't changing anything in that regard, except we're really approaching this from the standpoint the sidewalk system is a network, and everybody benefits. And that's where we get into this indirect benefit provision of the statute, because everybody benefits from the sidewalk network and not just what's in front of your home. So there's a portion of this that the property owner already pays as a direct cost, and there are other portions that are paid through property tax.
I'll point out, too, item three of the tree preservation. We are not budgeting that at all currently. Like, we roughly spend about $50,000 a year on those activities associated with the sidewalk program.
I just want to clarify something then on the priority bullet for the priority gap sidewalks. We don't believe anybody should get a free ride as it relates to paying for the initial cost of a sidewalk. Everyone that has a sidewalk in front of their property paid for that at one time or the other at the initial, when they walk a lot or whatever, there was an assessment project way back when. So we would attempt, in the case of all cases, to attempt to recover what we could through the 429 assessment process for new sidewalks that never had one before. Realizing the fact, though, that under 429, as you're all aware, we can be challenged and appealed to court. And so what we would suggest is whatever we can assess under 429, we would. And whatever we can't would become part of the cost for this program. Mm-hmm. So again, we attempt to recover everything we could through 429, but if only 50% of it was determined by the court to be eligible or benefit to the property, then the other 50% would be picked up by the program.
Okay. And again, my question is a little rhetorical at this point, but nevertheless, I think we'll have to be very clear on what we're talking about here and what that means ultimately to taxpayers.
Just to follow up, Richard, I didn't follow that. Maybe everybody else did. But so in cases where you've got a property owner who's got a couple of panels that have to be replaced, are you going to assess that, or is that going to be coming out of the fee?
It'd come out of the fee.
Okay. Yeah. You're talking about infill where somebody hasn't had a sidewalk before.
If there's no sidewalk in front of your house, right. There's never been a sidewalk,
then you get assessed.
We would assess you for whatever benefit we could show that added value to your property, and whatever amount was not determined to be a direct benefit would be an indirect benefit paid for by the program.
Now, your tree preservation removal management, because you're doing that now when you put a replacement part in, are you rolling that into the cost now?
Right now, it's on the Parks Department and their budget.
Okay.
I'm saying for this upcoming year, there are a lot of trees southeast. This is the estimated cost for dealing with that in this upcoming year.
And if you don't, it will just come back.
Well,
we
kind of made a commitment,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
It's cut the tree down, or cut the roots, and don't worry about what happens, which hasn't been our standard here for several years.
Well,
yeah.
Right.
And so if we want to preserve the trees, address trying to minimize damage to the root systems, it costs us more.
Mr. Campion?
Yeah, so I had a question here. So we draw these separate districts. Are they getting charged separate rates by district?
Potentially, yes. However, the way that one could approach that is because there's flexibility in this program, we would do the amount of inspection of sidewalks necessary to come up to whatever that number is to keep it even and stop. So we don't do 5%. Maybe it's 4.8% to balance the program.
I guess my question is also along the lines of if we have a downtown core DMC district and we have far northwest Rochester district, they're pulling from completely separate budgets, or they're inexorably tied to the same dollar amount?
They are not tied to the same dollar amount. First, the DMC would be a separate district and would be assessed based upon whatever DMC program is set. This really does not address the DMC very well. But the northwest part of the city and the northeast part of the city would have potentially, because they would be different projects, somewhat different assessment rates. However, we would think because we're trying to be uniform and keep the projects about the same size and the assessment areas about the same size, we would do that by varying the amount of work that we did each year to get it even.
Let me approach it maybe this way. So if you were to look at this, and I said earlier in my introduction, all or a portion, or portion or all of this. Let's just say, go back to the previous slide. Let's just say the needs were identified as $2 million roughly. But you said, okay, we only want to fund $1 million for this program. That's it. We would start at the top of the list, and we would go down in that priority, and those would be the priorities that we'd spend that $1 million. And that $1 million would only go so far. Because on the average, we think it's about $2 million per district. But we'd get as far as we could based on the amount of money. That would then lead to a rather uniform assessment from district to district to district to district to district, adjusted for inflation. So basically, if you said $1 million is what we want you to do in this program, we can do about half of what needs to be done through this mechanism, this funding tool, and you can basically deal with the other half through your budget if you decide to do that. But we would have a, and we think that's important. We think whether it's a geographic boundary or not, that the assessment rate from district to district, from year to year, should be rather consistent. That we go into Mr. Hickey's ward and all of a sudden the assessment is $10 a month, and we go to Mark's and it's $15 a month or $5, whatever stream. We don't think that that's going to be acceptable. And after we have a few of those inequitable assessments, you're going to want to change it. So we thought we'd just start with something that's rather uniform across the board, get the program implemented, and then see where you go maybe the second cycle through.
And based upon, you know, $1.5 to $2 million a year program, if you take the 30,000 homes that we have, that's about $5 a month. So $5 a month is kind of the program that this represents.
And do we have statistics on the average assessment? We don't know. We're not involved when they get the pink paint, what the cost is.
It varies.
But can we come up with an average? Would you be able to calculate it?
Is that it?
An average panel is running what per square foot?
$179.
Per square foot or per paint?
An average panel is $250 to $300.
$300.
And so to say how many in a neighborhood, how many property owners got tag, it varies. It varies neighborhood by neighborhood. It may be a third. I'm not sure that we had half, but it's in that for each cycle that we go through.
Mr. Bildeback.
Couple questions. So parcel size doesn't matter?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So if somebody has a huge, an acre property.
Yeah, I know, but.
A corner lot?
It's a half price on corner. It's a course. It's part of the statute.
I think a corner lot's a better example.
I think right. Should be
people who live on corner lots have to pay for both frontages. It's been a question forever in the assessment laws and assessment policies. And you know, we've got a complicated formula now that says it's up to 120 feet, or you get a credit. I mean, I don't even remember. It just isn't. It's the benefit is to the property and not based on the frontage.
I think people walk, and so if you live in a home, you have people there, and they get a benefit no matter if it's a small property or a large property. And their kids walk to school, for example.
And if right now there's a lot of properties that don't have any sidewalk on their property and probably won't for many years, they're included in this as well?
Well, we initially thought that basically all the properties that came in, about the 2,000 parcels that came in under the Water Quality Protection Program, would be exempt, because when they came in, the council said that the roads don't have to be rebuilt with curb and gutter, they don't have to have sidewalks, they can have back the rural section roads, and that there would be no requirement for them to put sidewalks in. This isn't the program to do that. 429 is the process to do that. So we thought that would be the case. There are other properties that we probably have some sort of an exemption process in here that, again, if they've been in the city for a long time, if you're the last, that acre parcel that's the last house on the end of the street, there's no place to go, you know, those type of exceptions will always come up.
But it's just indirect benefit. I mean, no matter where you live in the city, you're going to walk on sidewalks someplace in the city. I believe that there are the very, very small percentage of people that don't walk, but everybody walks, so everybody gets some benefit, direct or indirect, from having the sidewalk. That's one of the neat advantages of this particular statute over 429.
Mr. Quenville.
Richard, you said the council could decide just to spend a certain amount of money in one district. So what happens when they come back in 5 or 10 years and do the rest of the work that didn't get done?
Yeah. I mean, right now we get to one every district once every 20 years.
So under that scenario, though, you could have some bad sidewalks that never get replaced.
Yes.
Or doesn't get replaced for quite
probably
some time.
Probably not, because that would be the number one priority. So in most cases, the repairs are always going to be the first priority. The ADA transition plan, you might want to go from more than a 40-year plan or less to a 30-year plan. You could do that. The tree preservation, that may or may change by district, depending on the age of the trees. Again, Northwest, the trees aren't that old. They haven't created maybe that much of an impact on property as they have in Marsh Ward, for example. So, again, it's just another tool for you to help finance this and fund this. And so whatever amount you wanted to fund, you could include it. And whatever you found on this list that maybe should be it, continue to be a CIP project, you can handle it that way. I guess we're looking at it, it's not an all or nothing thing. And maybe you want to start small the first cycle through and just have the repairs and not do any of the other work. But we're thinking, you know, again, it's wide open, and we wanted to present this to you at this point to see if you have any interest in pursuing this. Again, it's not something we're suggesting you should implement for 2016. It may take another year to roll this through and think it through and look at the impacts, or you may want to find out a little bit of it and look at it for 2016.
But the big benefit is you're not going to get that bill for $300 stuck on yours or $600 or whatever.
Correct.
That's been the frustrating part is there are places in the Falwell neighborhood that you have to cross at unmarked intersections in order to follow sidewalks to school, and we've never had a way of filling in those gaps. And then to add insult to injury, you've got sidewalk on one side of the road where the person gets hit with a $1,500 assessment. And on the other side of the road, there's no sidewalk, so they're never going to get hit by any kind of assessment. And it's kind of unfair to put those huge one-time expenses on people that are carrying the weight of others. So I think this is a much fairer way to do it, and a way to actually get some of these gaps filled in, which otherwise they're just going to be there forever. I mean, there's...
I guess the one thing I didn't see covered is, like, taking on additional... inventory of new sidewalk. One of the things we're going through with the street system now is some review process of what we're taking in and what we're accepting. Is the same sort of contractual review process going to be in place for sidewalks?
Okay. Yes.
And ultimately there's some time period over which it's warrantied. Would we be standardizing that so everyone that's doing this building is giving us the same warranty period? Because I would expect that
yes.
Okay, as part of the
I mean, and that's part of the problem we have now, because again, you used to allow an individual to go out and repair their sidewalk. What kind of warranty do I get from you if you're doing your own sidewalk? Other than come back and tell you in 5 years you got to replace it again. So we got rid of that portion, but we do allow them to contract with their own company. So now I get three calls for three different sets of sidewalk in three different geographic areas of the community that I got to go out and inspect today. And so I've got a staff person running all over town doing single lot sidewalk inspections instead of basically being able to focus in an area working with a contractor over the course of several months in the summer to get this whole geographic area done, whether it's one of 10 or one of 5 or whatever number you decide on.
Mr. Hickey.
I don't know if you have an estimate of what percentage of people choose to have their own contractor, because my Northeast was done last year. I found the city's assessment very reasonable. I wasn't interested in finding another contractor. Do you know roughly what percentage?
I think it's around a half.
Oh, really?
It depends upon how many panels you have, Mark.
I suppose.
If you have two, it's hard to attract a contractor. If you have eight, it's a lot easier, because we charge not like a contractor would. It's per square foot.
Yeah.
And one panel, two panels, is half as much as two panels, and eight is eight one, times one.
Yeah, one panel on a corner lot is the super deal. So that's just my small sample size.
You heard.
So the last slide?
Mr. Ruska.
Richard, your last explanation, is that how you can get to them every 10 years versus every 20 years then, because you can, it's more of a encompassing program than running all over?
Yeah.
Okay, because you said that right now you're getting once every 20 years. But.
Well, that's our inspection. As John's got up there, had up there, was 5% per year.
Right.
And so, again, we get complaints. I mean, that tree root impacts that sidewalk. It doesn't wait for us to come back 20 years from now. It could do it 2 years from now or 5 years from now.
Inspection of 5% of the sidewalks has generated that kind of repair need. So the last slide, these are the kind of questions that, or directives or directions that we need from the council. Should we pursue this? Kind of district numbers 5, which basically means that there is a charge continuously, or 10, which means 5 on, 5 off for any particular home. If you have some advice on how we should district, whether it's by quadrant, geographic feature, or wards, again, all the discussions we've had on 5-year and 10-year program, you need to transfer that to a 6 and 12. Otherwise, it becomes real difficult to
change
it over. Yeah, the other problem is warrants change every 10 years. Mm-hmm. But and then what should be included in the program? We have a priority, but if there is some suggestions on how we should maybe refocus our priority, we believe that the repairs of existing sidewalks is the first priority. But I guess questions or more comments?
Mr. Campion.
Sorry, one more mechanical question. Is there, does this have to be done citywide all at once?
Well, we technically, you'd only be doing 1/10 of the city at any one time, but you'd be adopting a program for the entire city.
I guess the one aspect I see is like the people who are currently being assessed for $800. Does it make sense to cycle them in after this process?
Because they have those neighborhoods, a lot of people have already done their own. I don't think it would necessarily be fair for the ones that are still undone to be cycled in here. So it would be inspections that we do from here forward. So not the people that currently are obligated to do the sidewalk repair, but those that have a future obligation.
Okay. We've kind of done things geographically anyway, so we kind of know what the next area we're going to go to. Yeah. So I guess the answer to your question is that somebody's going to have paid for what they currently have due, and they won't see us for a while.
And if I was inspected 17 years ago and I'm not due for another 3 years, if we enact this in 2 years,
You might get it ahead of the 20.
Probably be right at the top of the list.
Got it.
But you wouldn't be assessed. You'd be at the top of the list, and you would get the benefit of being part of the collective so mutual
arrangement. You would be assessed instead of having to do it yourself or paying us directly.
I would be assessed. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This, but not the direct assessment, because I think this demystifies what Mr. Hickey
is
talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Mr. Bildeback, so you're saying this probably wouldn't happen until 17 at the earliest?
The construction of in 17.
We probably want by next summer for the program to be established, for you to adopt it, so we can begin the inventory, that sort of thing for 17. That would affect your 17 budget.
And we physically don't have the staff to do 5 or 10 districts at one time anyway, so we will need to break the city up and then focus on a district for each year. So if we have a 10-year program and you happen to be in the district that is number 10 on the list, then you don't have any assessment for 10 years. But it'll come around.
What about complaints? Do they, if you get a complaint, do they still get put in that current year?
Yeah, that's kind of getting down in the weeds now. Yeah, what we thought about, so again, if we're in a district in Nick's Ward, for example, mm-hmm. and the work was done 2 years ago under this program, and we get a complaint, we'll still go out and investigate it, we'll still go out and mark it, and we'll still fix it. And what we'll do is we'll just debit that expense toward that district, and when it comes back around in 8 years, there's that obligation that needs to be paid for through the assessment. So we'll have an ongoing program of responding to complaints anywhere in the city. And we'll be actually a lot more responsive that way, because we don't have to then go through the whole property owner notification. We can just fix it, and it's a debit, if you will, toward that district when it comes back around for assessment. So there's some carrying costs there, but it's, I think, a lot more responsive to complaints.
One thing I'd still like to get to a little bit is the cost to the property owner. And as you're looking for direction on this, one thing I might like to see, and this is for council discussion, it's probably more of a spreadsheet exercise to look at the different combination of options, the number of districts, quadrants versus, you know, 6 or 12 districts in a ward. And you mentioned there were like 5 or 6 different components of the program. You know, it gets a little more expensive as we add more components. But ultimately, I'm trying to figure out what combination, you know, is this going to mean $5 to a property owner if I add one component, and $15 if I do all 6? And I'm just trying to level set on that. I just throw that out there for discussion, Mr. Ruskin.
Yeah, I was looking at this a little bit today and researching. It looks like Ithaca, New York, is this where you kind of got the idea? They have the same kind of program, and they have 5 districts. I think Portland has a bigger all-encompassing program, but I think, you know, the 10 districts, I don't know, I like that, either the 5 or the 10. I don't like the idea of the wards or going to 6 and 12. I see some positives on 5 and some positives on 10, but the 5 is what I've seen other cities use. So with that, I guess I had the same concern about the rate per parcel, and, you know, when is that decided on and how, and what's that process?
If you take the number of parcels generally we have, and you take $5 a month per parcel, we're going to end up around $1.5 million. We have to do an exact accounting, because what do we include, what don't we include? Mm-hmm. Who's do we not include the water quality protection? I think any parcel that is probably ag probably should give a 0, for example. Mm-hmm. We need to go through some of that exercise. At this point, we've got just general estimates based on the number of parcels that we have.
Like non-profits, too? I mean, would that mean, how much do you get into detail?
Right now, non-profits don't get any relief here. So.
Okay.
Mr. Hickey.
So, and Randy touched on this before, but one of the things, whenever we try to have alternate funding mechanisms, you always get is, I'm already paying this in my property tax, you know, why are we doing this? Just put it on my property tax. So just throw it out, just to kind of look at the opposite extreme. Some of the benefits you mentioned here is in the current program, we assess the individual. There's overhead associated with that, you know, sending out the postcards. If they choose to have a contract, we're sending inspectors all over. So what if we implemented some of the same features of this program, but funded it directly from property tax, and just You know, it, we have some of the benefits of the less overhead for administration, but we just fund it from tax, property tax.
Again, I think we'd have some benefit, but what's the impact on property taxes if you want $1.5 to $2 million, of which only a small fraction now is covered by property?
But I think some of that right now. We're talking about primarily the difference would be the portion for sidewalk repair. Everything else, in theory, is already in the budget to some degree.
Except it's really not covered.
So we're not funding it at the levels we should.
Correct.
But the only thing that would be a new cost would be the top item. And in theory, there's some at least some savings in administration, certainly not those kind of numbers.
Yeah. Mr. Wildeback, what's the typical length of a sidewalk? I mean, I ask the question because I will have neighbors who said they've never had to replace a sidewalk.
So our official stance is at 40 years. There's a lot of sidewalk here that's older than 40 years, and there's a lot of it that had to be repaired or replaced short of 40 years. Okay. So I'm not sure a typical is easy to define.
But 40 is a pretty standard number that people use, and it's going to vary, but that's, if you need an average or normal, that's 40 would be the number I would answer the question with.
So what I would throw out is I like the 5 or 10 as well. I prefer the 5 just because that whole thing about the charge popping on and off every 5 years is kind of and I think I would rather, you know, just based on fairness to all parcels, my preference would probably be towards a fee as opposed to property tax, but I support getting both numbers. I think it's worthwhile. I think the program is worthwhile. I think that there's just a lot of things that we're just ignoring and don't have the budget for that we'll have to figure out how to handle at some point.
Yeah, I think that's a really fundamental question for the council is 5 years on, 5 years off, or just 5 years on, 5 years on, because it has to be a new assessment every 5 years. Mm-hmm. But in that assessment amount could change. It could be $5 a month for a 5 year period, and then the next time it could only maybe be 3, or it might go to 10. I mean, you're going to set that. You're going to set that by basically how much money you make available, but also based on the inventory condition. But we don't think that the number should vary very much from year to year, from district to district. Because again, as we looked at these districts, we kind of go radially out. So we've got old neighborhoods and new neighborhoods pretty much in all geographic directions of the city. So we think that the mix should be fairly consistent in the 10 districts, but or if you want to do the 5, whatever you want to do. But you're gonna have to set the amount every year with a budget. You're going to have to approve the assessment every year. So, I mean, there's probably 3 different times you're going to see this approval every year, no matter whether we do it on a 5-year cycle or a 10-year cycle.
And that's just one-fifth of, at least on the fee side, that's just one-fifth of the city that we're setting it for each year.
One-fifth or one-tenth or whatever.
So, you know, over time they're going to be the same, but they will change.
It will change, yeah. If nothing else, it'll change a little bit by inflation, but we would think that the program size should remain relatively consistent year to year.
And I would agree with the other comments. The 5 years on, 5 years off seems a little gimmicky, more administrative overhead than what's necessary. Mr. Ruskin?
I think I like the fact that it'll come back to us because I think what I was looking for today was the issues that maybe these things cause, the unintended consequences that it seems like a good idea, and then you put it out there and you start doing it, and all of a sudden you get a lot of issues out of it. So we'd be able to set the rate and consider this every year then? Is that
yep. Okay. You have to. You have to set the assessment rate.
Right.
Right. So it's there's a hearing, but it's not a 429 hearing where they can object and that sort of thing. So there's a process by which you go through to create the district, establish the fee, levy the assessment.
Let's not call it an assessment. You apportion the cost.
Okay. Tell me what to call it.
I just did. Because once you say assessment, that rings bells of Chapter 4.9.
An apportionment of cost.
There you go.
Mr. Bildebeck, then Mr. Newman.
I would prefer 5 districts, and I would prefer that we do in geographic.
My comment is, you know, this is similar to how you run RPU. I mean, it's running it more like a business. It's more consistency in doing the work. I mean, and maximizing your infrastructure. You know, property taxes, you hit hard times like we did from 2001 to 2010, and you'll have all the best intentions of putting the amount of money in the budget, but when tough times strike and you don't have the money, you'll cut it, and you'll have trouble getting it back. It's just, you know, whatever amount you decide to put in there, I do think this is a better way to run the business and to ensure your infrastructure is adequately maintained.
So, Mr. Bilderbeck threw something on the table for consideration, 5 districts and using geographic features as the boundaries.
Yeah, but 5 districts and a DMC district.
Correct. And my only comment was I didn't really see a big difference between the geographic and the, I don't know, whatever the second one was,
the quadrants.
And I mean, ultimately, you know, I assume we're talking rivers and major highways, so. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
This means.
Well, you know, this is very hard to see our infrastructure continue to degrade over time because we don't have the dollars, and it seems like a proactive way to bring things up to a satisfactory and safety level. I like the 5 districts. I think it's less painful to have this small amount that you know that's coming out, rather than have it 5 on and 5 off. Where was the ADA compliant? What are you going to do to the sidewalks?
It's more the corner ramps.
Oh, the corner ramps.
We have a transition plan and has several elements, but the big cost element is the corner ramps.
Those truncated domes and stuff like that. And we have to be compliant with federal requirements, and those change over time. And so whenever they make a change, we have to implement that change.
And anything new that we do and have done in the past for years before I came here, we built what was compliant at the time.
I understand that.
But since the process has changed now, and we need to look at the current standard. And our ADA transition plan says 40 years we'll bring ourselves into compliance. At current pace, we won't make that.
So if we go into the Blue District, for example, if that was your first district, we'd address the oldest of the ADA ramps, the ones that basically are, yeah, they're smooth transition, but they don't. The slope is wrong, for example. Versus the ones that we just replaced maybe 10 years ago that met the standard then, but we'll first go in and replace the ones that are 30 years old, not only because of age, but because they're the least compliant, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we aren't going to be able to do them all in any one district at any one time anywhere. So everything that was on that list of things we want to do will be based on doing the worst first.
I really like the ADA portion of this too. It's not necessarily a voice that's at the table right now, but you know, we have somebody who serves on one of our commissions that is you know, legally blind. That, you know, there are some really tough curves for people in that situation to get over, and they're obviously not driving anywhere either. And the newer ones with the they have the texture at the corner, as well as it's one of those many things that, you know, as we, you know, prioritize things, that it just keeps getting cut out. And this is a way of permanently addressing that.
The example you've got up there, is that just a representative sample, or is that diagram
it's
actually based on some feature?
Yeah, it's not very detailed, but it's pretty close for the features. This is Highway 63, and the Zumbro River comes through here, and this 52... for example.
So it doesn't have to be overly complicated.
No, I don't expect it will be.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you implying about engineers?
This is the railroad.
Certainly would be more efficient, wouldn't it, to have a concentrated area rather than sporadically going to make repairs.
Well, I certainly wouldn't favor the ward boundary because, as you say, those change every decade. So.
Yep.
Plus 6 years is messy. I just, the first time I see one of those pink lines show up on my sidewalk, I just feel like, jackpot!
I thought when I saw it on my sidewalk, I thought, where am I going to get this much money? I don't know why I had multiple
nobody likes the
pink
fees,
lines.
But that, you know, that's really destructive when it's, you know, four figures.
So now I'm hearing five districts.
Plus the DMC.
Plus the DMC, right. And then more of a continuous, not a five-year on, five-year off sort of deal. And we reevaluate the rates anyway, annually.
I'd like to see the initial rates anyway. I mean, I'm not sure what we're dealing with. We're hearing $5 a month. We're hearing
absolutely.
Kind of thing. So I don't know.
So he wants to come back with a spreadsheet to you, to kind of what Randy indicated, outline the...
I really would like to address some of those other components, not just repair and maintenance, but some of the other things that have been lagging for a while, too.
Well, to be honest with you, once you're in, if you're in a district every fifth year, you're going to see that cost should actually start coming back down a little bit because you're going to be there more often and addressing some of those deficiencies. It may take a little while, but eventually you're going to get caught up on a lot and you're going to be able to do more, say, ADA things in the third cycle through than you may be able to do in the first. So those are the type of logistic things that we thought a little bit about, but again, we just didn't want to spend a lot of staff time on this if you didn't have any interest in pursuing it.
Ms. Means.
How will the apportionment, is that correct?
Very good.
How will the apportionment be handled with DMC, the DMC area?
It will be on a property by property basis, just like it would in the neighborhoods.
The amount, though, is going to be so dependent upon that program. And my belief is you're probably talking about annual apportionments. And so it's going to get complicated because I really don't have a good idea how all of that is going to shake out, how the funding for various elements is going to occur. That's why we believed it had to be separate rather than combined with this.
And again, the DMC, I mean, we've agreed to hire the University of Minnesota to help with some design standards for some of the public spaces. The sidewalks would be one of those. So again, you know, businesses, they've got a decorative sidewalk panel in front of their building. They paid for it once. Now they've got a crack. You know, they really struggle sometimes to go out because that's pretty major cost. You got cost of barricades and trying to keep it open during, you know, the day. So this, again, I think will help logistically dealing with some of those issues related to the sidewalk in front of their business.
And there's an abatement district that provides some money for sidewalk replacement.
Well, I think we've whittled down some of the options, but there's still a few remaining, you know, variables. Is it too much to ask to come back so that we do have a better idea of what that cost is going to be?
Be happy to do that for you.
Sounds like we've got some time, obviously. Mr. Quenville, then Mr. Campion.
There was one point where we had some features of the property or classification system, and whatever we get back, can we talk about, I'd like to understand the implications and have some ability to fiddle with the classification system, make sure that we can get a good balance here and make sure everyone's paying the right amount.
Yeah, and again, that was just something for you to know that you could do something like that. Again, we think keeping it simple would be better, but you could have 5, 10, 15 different classes of property if you wanted to do that.
In the county's property listing, they have a number of categories. One of them is zoning, and that's not a real estate class. That's zoning.
Right, right.
But there is a couple of others, and they're going to vary a little bit. The residential, the single residential is one of those, so the R1, R2 is one classification.
Sure. Yeah. When you were bringing up the $5, you're basically saying we're not going to use any classification. We're just going to do a flat fee.
No, $5 is the base.
Okay. All right.
For the residential.
I wanted to make sure I understood what you're getting at. I'd like to see that in a spreadsheet if you can do it. Right. Bring back.
But we have to go through and first look at each of these and figure out how many properties are actually there. Take out the water quality protection. Properties, maybe some others like the ag land, probably maybe that should be a zero and some things like that. But this is kind of a broad brush approach to get, shall we go forward and do those details?
So we can kind of assume that you are indicating the general approval of the concept, a five-year, five districts, a five-year rotation consistent, and more information to be provided on a number of factors within the concept.
I think so. I mean, we see the deficiency. We see the gaps and the we're falling short in terms of some of the funding to accomplish what we would like to. So I think it's good, and staff should be commended for trying to come up with some options for our consideration as far as the best way to meet that obligation. So I agree that I think we're giving some consensus to at least come back with that additional information.
When would you like to see this? Do you want after the first of the year, since it really isn't going to affect
yep.
this coming year's budget? Would that be
right? Yeah, there doesn't seem okay. to be an explicit urgency.
Okay, we'll get something ready for you in January.
So when are you coming back with the street improvement district?
The statutes don't actually allow us to do that yet. But
Randy's going to get that done for us. We can mess up the cities.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
I've got one thing to discuss real quick. I'm going to pull D27 tonight. That's where we're going to set the wastewater rates. Previously, Richard had sent us kind of the study that looked at the freezing the customer charge, and I asked him to send an alternate RCA also. So I still like that. I mean, that's revenue neutral. It's just not the customer charge is frozen, and we get the rest of the revenue from the usage. And that's what I'm going to ask. I'm going to pull that tonight, and that's what I'm going to ask that the council support. So we've had it consider over the weekend, and just think about that, and we'll cover that tonight.
All right, Mr. Newman.
Along with several, and I talked to Ed called me about this on the charter resolution. The reason we gave you two options is because it's a big financial transaction, and even though we got a good report for the consultant, we thought you might want the option just from the time run out on it, which we don't need to take any action on it. So either approving the resolution that Brian redrafted, which is the one in your agenda, that is acceptable, or taking no action is acceptable.
And the net is the same?
Right.
The
net result is the same.
Either one gets the same result.
Yeah, right.
It's so, kind of weird to have a consent agenda where there's two different choices.
Yeah, I just thought some of you may say, consent well, it's a big financial deal, so let's just stay on it. So.
All right. Anything else this afternoon? And we'll see everyone this evening.
Catch Steven. I'll catch you right next time.
Would you mind?
Aaron.